guest today is Shahed Chaudhry. Shahed, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing great. I understand you have a book coming out.
I do. It's all about the all-new ASP.NET 5, which has been recently renamed to ASP.NET Core 1.0.
Oh, you have to do a find and replace in your book now, right?
Yes, I did. So I'm actually writing a book right now on the new ASP.NET. And I am wrapping things up. Uh-huh. So as we're doing some revisions in the last couple of months, I'm going to go ahead and make sure that it's always up to date and that you can get the most value out of it when the technology comes out at the same time as the book.
What's the schedule on the book and the technology?
So the technology, it's still TBD for the final release. There is an RC1, or Release Candidate 1, that's available as of November 2015. Uh-huh. And everything's pretty much settled for ASP.NET. There's some .NET tooling stuff that's still being worked through. And the TBDs will be in 2016 sometime, but I'd let the ASP.NET team decide when those dates are going to be.
And they're not deciding in secret, right? They're actually sharing a lot of information. But everyone else will dig yet, but you can see the progress of it.
Exactly. So ASP.NET itself is open source. The documentation, the announcements, as soon as it becomes public, are open source. So everything's available on GitHub. So if you do a quick search for ASP.NET roadmap, you will find the roadmap available publicly on GitHub. So again, on the roadmap, it currently says TBD for the next release candidate, which is RC2, and also for the 1.0 release, which is essentially RTM, or Release to Manufacturing. So those will be out soon.
Hopefully it will change from TBD to an actual date.
Exactly. Yep.
But we have the promise of the team that as soon as they know, they will let the world know.
Exactly.
They're not, this is the new Microsoft, right?
Yep.
Because not only is the roadmap public knowledge, the source code is open source.
Right. And not only is it open source, for the first time in history, it's natively cross-platform. As in, out of the box, it's cross-platform. There have been other solutions like using Mono to run .NET and other platforms. But for the first time, Microsoft is providing a solution that runs on iOS, or rather OS X, and Linux, and on PC and Windows as well.
That's amazing.
Yep.
That's so I'll be able to write an application and deploy it.
Right. So again,
ASP.NET applications.
Exactly. So you can develop it on your Mac. You can deploy on your Mac as well. And if you have a Linux server, let's say in a Docker container running in Microsoft's Azure Cloud system, you could deploy it from your Windows development environment to Linux. So again, you can develop on any one of these platforms and deploy to any one of these platforms.
How's that going to work? Because the reason I can deploy to Windows right now is because Windows actually includes the .NET framework, right?
Right.
It has a lot of those libraries in. And it almost has to, because the .NET framework is so big. You don't want to download these gigabytes of files just for my little application, right?
So there's two things that are changing with the new .NET. It's become really modular, so you only keep what you need.
Okay.
So you start with the basic core and you start adding the pieces. So again, the footprint of the .NET framework is not only new and optimized and with higher performance, but again, it's smaller to deploy, which enables the second part, which you're actually going to deploy the framework along with your application.
Okay.
This is brand new. So if you're deploying the framework along with your application, there is no what we used to call the GAC, or Global Assembly Cache, that holds the .NET framework. It's just a bunch of files in a folder. So again, you deploy your references as needed. Right. You only use what's needed.
Oh, okay. So I don't have to deploy the entire .NET framework.
That's correct.
Only those parts of it that are my application is exposed.
And it's key to recognize that the .NET framework, as it stands today, will continue to be developed. So right now it's at 4.6. The full .NET framework continues to run on Windows today.
Okay.
And it supports full Windows applications, WPF, Windows Forms, and obviously ASP.NET as we use today. Mm-hmm. But the new ASP.NET Core will not only run in the full .NET framework, it runs in the cross-platform .NET Core, which will be on, again, PC, Mac, Linux. So there's two .NETs, the framework, which is at 4.6,
okay,
and the .NET Core, which started off as 5 during the previews, but again, it's been renamed to .NET Core 1.0 to indicate that it's not a replacement for the next version of the full .NET framework. It's a side-by-side implementation that is modular and cross-platform.
Okay, I'm not sure I got my head around this here. There's a .NET 4.6 and there's a .NET Core.
Right.
And they're being developed in parallel.
That's correct.
So presumably there might be a .NET 4.7 in
Right.
Maybe a new...
So, right. So I can't speak for the version numbers from the product scene, but again, if you're using .NET Framework right now, you can continue to develop on the full .NET 4.6 framework. And if you're doing things like ASP.NET on the new .NET Core, the ASP.NET version that runs on .NET Core, the new ASP.NET also runs in the full .NET framework. So you can choose to use the current .NET framework if you want, or if you want to migrate to the core, you don't have to change your application code. You can just switch it to run on one versus the other.
All right, so there was, what's the differences? You mentioned one of the differences already, which is that ASP.NET Core will run on a Mac and will run on Linux, as
that's
well
right.
as running on Windows.
Right.
So if you wanted to run cross-platform, Core is the best.
Right. So, and if you wanted a good migration path, again, you can take your existing applications that are running on the full .NET framework and then have the full the ASP.NET application run on the core, and then you can start testing it on other frameworks. So some people might be wondering, well, what if I have something on the full .NET framework? Will everything run in .NET Core? Well, .NET Core is not all of the full .NET framework. Mm-hmm. If you're using Windows-specific APIs and maybe some tools and frameworks that are running on the full .NET framework, those may not be available on Core. But if you're starting with a clean implementation of an MVC, ASP.NET web application, that's something you can build to run on the core or the full framework.
Okay, so I think you're answering the question I was about to ask, which is, how do I choose this? Which framework to use? And if I want the features of the new .NET Core, I would certainly choose that.
Right.
And the only reason I might choose to do it, I'm going to start calling it the legacy framework. That's unfair, I know. But .NET 4.6 now is if I needed some functionality that isn't available. I wanted a message box, for example. I assume that's not part of ASP.NET Core.
Right, so you wouldn't be doing you wouldn't be doing any Windows applications in .NET Core.
Okay. Very cool. And talk a little about the open source part side of this. It's on GitHub.
Right, so the best thing about being open source is that it not only takes contributions from people who work at Microsoft, it takes contributions from people who may be anywhere in the world. They could be submitting a pull request, and people at Microsoft actively look at these pull requests, and they will accept these. So even today, the reason the .NET framework is going so quickly and going across all these platforms is because we've been getting a lot of feedback from our customers and developers, and they've been putting their code and their suggestions into the suggestion box, so to speak, but also submitting code that they would like, including performance improvements.
Yeah, we've had the suggestion box for a long time, like user voice. But I don't know when we started actually accepting contributions. Are we actually accepting them, or are we just kind of listening?
Yeah, so a little bit of both. So anything that's in the pull request, again, I don't work for the product team. I can't speak for them, but from what I've seen, pull requests are being reviewed and accepted on a case by case basis.
I think I saw a number. It was like 20% of the code was from.
Right, I've seen that number as well. So again, a nice number, and that's
it's all
awesome.
GitHub. You can just go look it up.
Yeah. So again, that number changes. It's been growing over time.
Okay.
So there's not just a fixed number, but it also sounds like the number of Linux servers that are running on our Azure cloud platform. I know it's more than 20% right now. Our VMs on Azure are running Linux, and again, this has come from customer demand.
Right.
People have asked for it; they've wanted it. Customers are using Linux in their own data centers, and using ASP.NET is a great way to not only deploy your applications in Azure, but also to your own data centers that could be running Linux as well.
Wow, that's a new Microsoft. There.
Yep, it's a new Microsoft.
some of the deployment features are a little different. ASP.NET Core than they were in the past. Talk about that.
Yeah, so when you're deploying, another thing to consider is configuration. Instead of having multiple web.config files, you're essentially using JSON-based configuration files for your project and for your references and for your environment. So in addition to that, you can also set environment variables to tell your application whether you're running in development or staging or production. And this is by convention. You could name it whatever you wanted to. But again, using some conventions will allow you to use some of our framework diagnostic API calls. So you can check to see, is my environment currently in development? you don't have to check for a specific string. But so yeah, if you go with the convention, you can use some functions that are available for you.
Sure.
So the good thing about this is that if you're deploying to Azure, for example, you can use an Azure-based environment variable for that web app that you're deploying to. If you're deploying to IIS or any web application, you would define the appropriate environment variables.
Sure.
And in your development environment, we have a brand new thing in .NET called user secrets. That's something
I just learned about this morning.
All right. Well, user secret is pretty exciting because it's not a credential vault like you would store passwords in, but something that you would normally keep in a config file, such as database connection strings with database passwords on a development machine. You would keep that in your user secrets just for your local environment. And that's not something you would use in deployment. In deployment, you would use environment variables values or something set up in Azure in your web app.
Okay. That makes there are differences between development and production. They, for example, put a different database.
Right.
But also for not checking database passwords. And
exactly. You definitely don't want to. Right. You definitely don't want to check in your passwords. In fact, many years ago, I guess it's been a couple of years though, when I first started my blog with just wakeupandcode.com, one of my first posts was based on connection strings. So it was all about having a connection string that you could safely have in your development environment and not have it messed up with your other development teams, team members.
That's what we're saying.
Yeah. So things have changed a little since then, but again, the concepts are the same. You definitely do not want to mess with your connection strings and share it inadvertently.
All right. And then there's some differences in how you go about testing these applications. Right?
Yes.
How are you talking about that?
So that's something that I've been doing both internal talks and external talks at public user events. So in order to do some automated testing in your apps, you could write code to test your code. Now, this is not something that's new. It's always been around. But with some dependency injection and also some automated testing frameworks, you can write this code that sits in a project alongside your web application code. And the reason you want to do that is make sure that anything you've written before, your features are still working, you haven't broken anything, you haven't introduced any new bugs, and you can feel confident that the new code you're going to write is going to work, it's not going to break something. And if it does, your unit test will tell you right away. And why is this very important? It's because right now we have some basic DI features or dependency injection in ASP.NET. Now, you could use an existing IOC container for inversion of control, or you could use the new features that we've introduced and combine that with testing framework. So again, Microsoft has been developing MS Test for a while. Right now with the release of ASP.NET coming out with the new one, you would be using xunit.net for now. Some people might question, well, what's happening to MS Test? MS Test is coming, so it's being developed. I actually haven't had a chance to use it in my applications. But from what I know, MS Test will be available with the full release of ASP.NET if it hasn't been released, if it hasn't been developed already. But again, throughout the whole preview versions, XUnit.NET is the one that's been mentioned in documentation, and that's a version that's a framework that I've been using in my own applications.
Oh, Paragon is pretty similar if you're used to MS Test or used to NUnit.
Right. So again, just as long as you pay attention to the ASP.NET team's announcement, their blogs, their roadmap, and so on, just if you really want to use MS Test, just make sure, just check to see if it's available already and if it's something you'd like to use. But for now, I would recommend using XUnit.NET, which is what all the documentation's been in so far.
And then I saw some changes to the review engine.
Yes.
The Razor View engine, which always kind of reminded me a little bit of classic ASP.
Exactly. I've thought the same thing. So the huge difference is in classic ASP, again, using VBScript in an active server page, it was all interpreted, right? The performance wasn't there. But you would see all these little yellow tags so to indicate your server code versus your client-side code.
Right.
And then we started getting into web forms, again, to bring in Windows developers, visual developers into web development. Uh-huh. That became really messy and heavy. We moved over to ASP.NET MVC. And MVC has been around for a while in other languages and frameworks. Uh-huh. But bringing into ASP.NET allowed us to have lighter Razor views. But what happened was that you would have all these tags that would still have C# code inside your Razor view. So the new thing that's really changed everything for the view engine is tag helpers. What tag helpers do is they allow you to have custom attributes inside your HTML compliant tag. So you could have a form tag. You have a form tag, and you'd have attributes to indicate the controller and action method that it submits to, as opposed to having some C# code in your view that indicates that it's a server-side form.
Interesting. Yep. So there's behind that. The HTML tags are the same. They are HTML tags.
They're HTML tags.
They're standard, but they have these custom attributes which are not standard.
Right.
They're not well-formed HTML.
And then this is some built-in things that you use. You can actually extend that and build your own custom tags and attributes. So let's say you want to indicate what environment you're in.
Okay.
You can enclose some of your HTML elements in these custom server-side tags that indicate whether the server-side environment is in staging or it's in production. That way it shows different HTML based on which environment you're on.
Okay.
And the best way to see this in action is to create a brand new project by clicking File, New Project in Visual Studio 2015 and choosing the sample web app. And that already has a lot of stuff populated in there, and it gives you some examples.
So if I run that, there will be some like a form attribute, it's a custom, or form tag with a custom attribute. But when I actually view it in the browser, I won't see a custom attribute, will I? I'll see something, it will be transformed.
Right, it transforms to the appropriate HTML.
And maybe some JavaScript as well.
Exactly, so it'll be transformed into whatever is appropriate for submitting that form to the server. Yeah.
Oh, interesting. All right. Any key feature that we've missed? I know there's a lot in ASP.NET Core now.
I think overall, the fact that it's more higher performance, it's leaner, it's modular, open source, those are the key features that I want to talk about.
Yeah.
And when you think about open source, also think about other parts of .NET. For example, Entity Framework. Entity Framework is an ORM, or Object Relational Mapper, and it helps you write code against your database without having to worry about the SQL code that goes in the database or working with the database directly. You can have EF generate your database as needed through something called EF migrations. So that's been around for a long time through several versions. But the new EF core is also going the cross-platform route, and it's also been open sourced as well. So again, both EF6 and EF7 are open source, but EF7 is the cross-platform core version that runs on all these other platforms.
All right. And what's the name of your book?
So the book, it was originally titled ASP.NET 5 Essentials.
Change that now.
Renamed to ASP.NET Core Essentials.
Published by?
It's published by Pack Publishing, and should be out later this year, 2016.
Chad, thank you so much.
All right, thank you. You're watching Technology and Friends.